Yeah. All right. Brian Wells, League in the Lantern. Talk about your book.
Yeah, so it's, it's for 9 to 14-year-olds. I have a real heart for kind of the middle school age. I just think that that's just such a precious, impressionable time for kids, you know, for good and bad. You know, their search for significance is starting to bubble up for the first time. Their ideas on what a friend is. Boys are looking at girls, the whole kind of thing. So my heart has always been to create great stories that really engage kids at that age, but also call out what's best in them as opposed to praying out what's worst in them. So that's what The League in the Lantern is.
Excellent. I haven't read it yet. She has been reading it.
Okay.
I plan to read it because she's bragging about it.
Oh, great.
Sounds like something I would be interested in. And one thing I noticed in the very back here, this intrigues me. So we've taken some creative fun and history in this book, but you might be surprised by what's true.
That's right.
So talk about your process there. What did you do?
Yeah, well, you know, kind of a former Disney executive read the book, and he called it Percy Jackson Meets National Treasure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what he meant by that was it's this fun action adventure that kids can relate to. At the same time, it does weave history in there. So I grew up earlier in my life in Nigeria. My parents were missionaries and then moved to the States when I was young. And grew up the rest of the time in Springfield, Illinois. And that's kind of, you're in the shadow of Abraham Lincoln everywhere you go. You know, his home, his tomb, everything. And I always grew up fascinated by a lot of both the fact and the mythology in that. And I always thought there would be good mystery kind of in there. So with The League in the Lantern, we have a lot of fun. You know, we make up things about these two evil organizations that have been at war in the world for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we've real history in there as well. You know, Abraham Lincoln's House Divided speech, you know, why did he write that at the time? You know, his second inaugural address when he called for not malice but mercy, you know, those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
So we weave real Civil War history into this.
Yeah.
But I also feel like I feel a responsibility to kids to help them delineate between fantasy and reality. So that quote at the end of the book there, it's because you can go to leagueandlantern.com when you're done reading the book.
Uh-huh.
There's one section that's called Fact, Fiction, and Find Out More. And you can go on and it says, okay, here's this part of the book that we made up, but here's the part of history that that's based on. Now go to this link and find out more about that. So that's what that's all about.
I like that. It looks like this is the first part of a series.
That's what I'm planning. I'd like it to be a series of 5 books, so this is the first one.
Okay, so I was wondering how many there were going to
be.
Yeah. Our kids are, I say our kids, I am too. We're all interested in writing novels and that sort of thing. What advice would you give someone to write a book like The League in the Lantern?
Well, you know, like some of it probably sounds like cliche advice, but it's so totally true, is that great writers are great readers.
Yeah.
You know, and you just need to be a passionate reader. Mm-hmm. And that's what I am. And it's interesting. I'm a passionate reader of this genre, kind of middle grade. So I just love middle grade books. You know, I'm just unabashedly, you know. Read all the Harry Potters, and I know there's kind of good and bad in that for people, but as an adult, I can appreciate, you know, kind of the storytelling in it.
Mm-hmm.
But just finished reading Hatchet, you know, because I had never, people were telling me how they loved Hatchet. I'd never read Hatchet. I'm halfway through again reading Phantom Tollbooth, etc. I just love this kind of genre for whatever reason. So I guess the first thing I'd say is, you're most likely going to write best whatever you enjoy reading the most, you know, what that is. That's one. And then the second thing is, and again, it sounds a little bit of cliche, is that writers write.
Yeah.
You know, that's the beautiful thing about books, you know, that you have all the tools. You have all the nouns and verbs that everybody else has, you know. It's not like you need to go out and hire a production crew to make a movie and things like that. You can write. Will you write poorly? Maybe. Mm. But writers write.
Mm.
If you don't write, you're not a writer. If you do write, whether you ever publish anything or not, you are a writer.
Yeah.
So that's the second thing, is that writers write. And then the third thing that I always tell people is, and I really tell this with my son a lot. So my son's going to be a junior in college.
Okay.
He wants to be a high school English teacher, studied English language arts education, loves to write, doesn't like to rewrite so much.
Yeah,
you know? That's part of my kids. Well, they're working on it. They are definitely, they've written the first one, but.
Yep. Love to let the juices flow, you know, but then when it comes to, and the thing that I always tell him is that writers write poorly.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you do. Get that first draft out and just commit that I will write a bad first draft. That's what I'm going to do.
Go ahead and get that out of
the way. Then you come back and you're pleasantly surprised by some parts of it. You know, but then you have something to work with. And the other temptation, I think, is as writers is, I call it the shiny object. It's like a cat with a shiny object.
I don't have that problem.
So you already know what I'm talking about then. You got the thing here, and then you're writing it, this idea, and then you get about halfway into it, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, I got another idea. And it's like the shiny object. Oh, go to that one. You know,
let's do that.
And you end up with like 10 half-written manuscripts as opposed to one complete but poorly written but complete. So finish something.
Yeah, finish something. I like that. Now, I've read that writers never really finish a book. They just get it taken away from them.
That is true.
What draft is the league in the land?
Yeah. Well, the draft number, boy, I don't know. I tell kids, I know I've rewritten that at least 20 times.
Wow.
At least 20 times I know that I have. And I had a wonderful editor I worked with on this. He used to be the chairman of the creative writing department at Miami University up in Oxford. So then when I got an editor involved in it, that was really interesting. And then the biggest blessing for me in this was I enrolled about probably 12 to 15 9 to 14 year old kids who were beta readers for me, who read a manuscript and then just gave me raw feedback. And how old are your kids?
20 and 22.
Okay.
But I still call them
My nephews are right the age.
Okay.
This age.
Well, you've paired to 20 and 22. I've got a 21-year-old and a 17-year-old. You've already been through that gauge where you know 9 to 14-year-old kids, they're going to give you their feedback. You don't have to beg them to be honest.
No.
They will be. My daughter at that age, her favorite term was just being honest. Just being honest. There's something like truth. Truth and love, though. We want kind of.
Right.
But that was one of the other big pieces in this, the revision process, was having kids read this and give me feedback on what was resonating and what wasn't.
That's very important. They're your audience.
Yeah.
And that's right. That's your writing.
Yeah, and there's this thing. I at our church, I talked about this because I used to oversee all the creatives at our church, the musicians, the artists, etc. And I said there's something called creative humility, that we need to understand this idea of the artist who's just like, I don't care what anybody thinks, I'm just making my thing. You know what? That's not why God gave you a gift.
Right.
He gave you a gift for other people. It's not that you need to do everything that people tell you to do, but you need to care about what your audience thinks because you're giving a gift to them.
Right.
You know?
That's very right. Very true. So did you have questions? We left our questions at home.
Quite all right.
At the hotel. Anyways, I was trying to think how it was worded.
So you already have all five books plotted?
Well, that's an interesting term, because I don't know if you've heard those terms before. Plotting and pantsers are the two terms that people describe.
I've heard plotting.
Okay. A plotter is somebody who really outlines out, and then a pantser is somebody who goes by the seat of their pants.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a plotter. I'm a plotter.
I tried to do the plotting.
Yeah.
And my characters will not obey me.
Yeah.
I don't know what's up with that.
Well, I try to do the pantsers, and my characters will not speak to me. So, I'm mostly a plotter. I would say probably about 70% of the book is plotted out before I start writing, and then I start to realize, hey, there's a different direction to go in.
Okay.
For book two, I'm about probably two-thirds of the way through the outline for book two.
Okay.
And I have a big writing retreat coming up in a couple of weeks where I'm going to try to get the first draft kind of out in book two. And I know where I want the series to end in book five. In between, we're going to see how it goes.
I like the way you say that. One thing that I think my train of thought is that you know where you want to start. If you have an idea of where you want to end, then you can write that path to that ending.
Yeah.
How much truth is there in that?
Yeah, I think that's right. And it's that thing I've heard of, because you know where you want to go.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't know exactly how you're going to get there. And I think those are the best stories, because I've always heard that the best stories are the ending is inevitable, but how you get there is surprising. You know, and that's the mix of a good story. It's both familiar yet surprising.
Right.
Yeah, I like that. So did you have a lot of plot changes?
As I was revising, I did have a few things. I did have a few things where the story took me in different directions than I was anticipating. And I did do a couple revisions of it where I just went, because I'm a big just for me personally, and part of that's probably another thing for a writer, at least early when you're writing, I always say, write something you enjoy. Yeah. Just write a story that's going to, yeah. because you're never going to be able to predict what everybody else wants, so you might as well write something that, you know, right. that you really enjoy. Well, I really enjoy being surprised. There's nothing I enjoy less than going to a movie, and you can tell mm-hmm. everywhere it's going the whole time. You know, it's just like, oh, this is so predictable. I like to be surprised. So I did a couple drafts of this where I was just like, are there enough twists in this? Mm-hmm. Am I being too overt with where I'm going? Am mm-hmm. I, you know, are my red herrings too obvious and mm-hmm. clumsy? I did several drafts of it where I was just saying, are there enough twists and turns yeah. along in this road here?
So you're analyzing your writing process. You're plotting and scheming.
Yeah.
And you're analyzing this to see if your audience will like yeah. what you've got. And you're checking their reactions.
Yeah, but you have to be careful of, which is why I talk about that first draft, of really getting that first draft out. Because mm-hmm. you don't want to be analyzing and editing while you're writing the first draft. You'll never finish it.
Okay.
Just write that first draft and then analyze and edit later. Don't get caught up. And so there's a real discipline to me in the first draft of I would want to go back and change things. And I'm like, no, there will be a time for that. Yeah. My goal is to get to the end here, and then I can go back and change it.
So do you make notes for those changes?
I will.
And implement them later?
I have two kind of files I keep while I'm writing. One is ideas that I'm getting that I want to come back to in this book and look at. And then the other one is the shiny object,
yeah.
you know, where it's like, oh, there's another idea for a book. Okay, just put it in this file.
That way you don't forget come it, back but to, you right. can get back
I
to
can
what
you sleep
at
night knowing like it's that. Somewhere, you know.
You have it written.
Yeah.
Like my daughter, she goes, I'll remember that later. No.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I do not trust my memory.
No.
I do not trust my memory.
No, that's the way she used to be. I'll remember that. Now she's like, hey, that's a good idea.
Well, good for her. Good for her. She's learned. That's interesting because I just had this conversation yesterday at dinner with my 17-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
What was I asking? Oh, I know. We're going out of college. We're going on another mm-hmm. college visit this summer, and I need her to give me some possible dates that's good for her, and we'll match them up. And I said, and I told her, she said, okay, I'll do that. I said, how do you know you'll do that? Did you just write that down? You know, do you have? And so we had to have a conversation again. I said, you know what? I got to tell you, the answer to so much success in life mm-hmm. is write down what you want to do mm-hmm. and then cross it off when you do it. You know, that's the only
I
way
like
you
it.
Know you do it.
I like it. That's
I'm
awesome.
A list maker.
That way you know what you're going to do and you stick with it.
And maybe you don't end up doing it, but at least it's a conscious decision that you didn't do it. It wasn't because you forgot.
That's a good
right.
point. A lot of times we just forget.
Yeah.
Have you ever forgotten what you were going to do with the character after you wrote the story? And then you remember later, oh, yeah, I was going to do that. And then you have to go back and you have to rewrite parts of it because it doesn't fit now.
I don't know. Yes, there was. There was one piece with Jake in this, the main character, that I had built in originally and then forgotten about. And mm-hmm. then when I went back, it was popping up every now and then, but not in a mm-hmm. in a consistent way, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of later in the book referring back to something that wasn't in there anymore. And it's like, this is confusing. So I did have to go back through and say, okay, I got to be consistent here. Either take this out or put it in.
It works. I'll name a character something here and then later call it by this name.
I've done that exactly. That was the character, that was the thing with Jake there. And in one of the final edits, my copy editor was looking at it and it was who's this Josh that comes up? Like, oh, Josh is Jake's evil twin.
Talking about the writing process a little bit, what are your favorite tools? Scrivener?
You know what? I have never. I am old school. Mm-hmm. It's Microsoft Word. It's Microsoft mm-hmm. Word. You know, I've never gotten. I've. At some point, I probably will get into Scrivener. People tell me about the merits of it and all that. It just seems to be, the learning curve for that mm-hmm. seems to not be worth the payoff yet.
My son loves it. My daughter won't even try it.
Yeah.
And he's trying very hard to get her to.
But I will say. I'm at least intrigued to try it at some point because there was a point earlier in my life where I didn't think I could think at a keypad. I had to write out longhand. And I've transitioned to that, and now it's hard for me to think like this. I have to think like this. So I got to think, okay, maybe there is, I got to keep trying new things.
I use a Word for nonfiction, and I use Scrivener for fiction.
Okay.
And I do like the way it works, but you're right, there's a learning curve.
Yeah.
It takes some work to get in there and figure things out.
Yeah.
But I'm always interested in what tools other people use.
Well, and mentioning of tools, I will mention, you know, keep or toss, but I'm also a huge student of the craft, and so I could list a few of the books that I've read.
Because
I have read, when we started, you know, I come out of this from making movies.
Yeah.
So when we started making movies about 9.5 years ago, I didn't know anything about it. I was trying to get a unofficial PhD in storytelling and movie making. So I've read at least 50 books on script writing and storytelling in one form or the other. And most of them not worth the reading, you know, but I would say that the cream of the crop when it comes to storytelling for me is there is a, for me, for this genre, there's a book called Writing Irresistible Kid Lit.
Okay.
Writing Irresistible Kid Lit, and I wish I remember the author's name, but that's a fairly unique title, right? Cheryl Cole, I think it is.
Okay.
Writing Irresistible Kid Lit. There's another one called Creating Unforgettable Characters. And I cannot remember, Linda something or other is the author of that. She mostly does script consulting, but writing or creating unforgettable characters was a really great one. And then there's one called, I think it's Second Sight, and it's written from an editor, a children's book editor, writing about the editing process, which I found fascinating. And then from an inspiration standpoint, there's two books. I'm not really I don't really read, I've never read anything of Stephen King's ever.
Mm-hmm.
But he's written a book about writing that's one of the best I've ever read. It's called On Writing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just about the process of writing and the craft of writing, which is fantastic. And then another one called Bird by Bird by Anne Lamott. And both of those books are fantastic. Both those books for me, the liberating thing for me was one, it gave me the freedom to devote as much time to my reading as I do writing, because I always felt like I was cheating when I was reading. I should be writing right now, and instead I'm indulging myself.
Yeah.
So what I would do is I would have a book that I really loved, and I would reward myself. If I finish this much writing, then I get to read another chapter over here.
That works.
And when I read like Stephen King's book and Anne Lamott's book, these two very successful writers, reading is an absolute part of the discipline.
Yeah.
It's part of your job. Yeah. You know, so that really freed me of that. And then the second one is Anne Lamott titled her book Bird by Bird because when she was younger, she had to do some project for school for science class, she had to locate and record all these different birds.
Mm-hmm.
She had to do this bird watching project. And she was so overwhelmed by it. And her dad said, you know what? We're just going to do this one bit at a time. We're going to go bird by bird. Bird, we're just do one at a time. And that's how she approaches writing. She said, I'm just going to write one page today. I'm going to write one page, I'm going to write one chapter, whatever. Take it bird by bird. Next thing you know, you got a manuscript.
That works. So who's some of your favorite authors?
Favorite authors? Well, it would depend. I guess just the blanket question on that favorite author, C.S. Lewis is my absolute favorite author. I came to my relationship with Christ through reading Mere Christianity. It just kind of connected the dots for me in almost like any way nothing ever had.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that. And then I went on and I read Chronicles of Narnia and all that. I'm big fans of that as well. As far as favorite book, probably To Kill a Mockingbird.
Okay.
It's still my favorite book, you know, of all time. And then I became a huge fan of the Harry Potter books.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that within my friendships of Christian circles, we as parents are in a lot of different places about Harry Potter.
Right.
You know, some of it, and I respect where everybody is on it, you know. For me, my thing is, and I talked to a parent the other day, I thought they worded it right. They said, I enjoy the Harry Potter books. I will let my children read them when I feel they're each at the age where they can distinguish reality from fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
When they're at the age where they can distinguish reality, I think, and she said for each one of my kids, that's a different age.
Yeah.
But like for me, I think they're brilliantly written books. I also realize they go to pretty dark places.
Mm-hmm.
And I would never want to throw a 9-year-old or 10-year-old into those waters unaccompanied. Mm-hmm. If they were going to read it,
definitely.
I would be reading it as a parent with them, you know, and helping them interpret, you know.
Right.
And like a perfect example for me, my kids never got into Harry Potter. You know, I read it as an adult, but they didn't get into it. But like the perfect example for me, my daughter's 17. When she was about, that's maybe 2-3 years ago, she's 14 or 15. She started reading the book Fault in Our Stars. You familiar with that? Author named John Green. It's a really popular young adult novel. It became a movie about a year or two ago, and it's about two teenage kids that are cancer patients that fall in love.
Okay.
And it's a really poignantly written, beautifully written kind of book for that kind of, for a teenage girl. It's a beautifully written book. My daughter started reading it, and I always made it a habit when my daughter was younger to be reading anything she was reading so we can engage
about it. The exact same thing.
So I read it, and it's a brilliantly written book. At the same time, these two teenage kids that are both terminally ill, they fall in love, they have sex about two-thirds of the way through the book. So I was able to sit down with my daughter at the end of reading the book, and I was able to tell her, and, you know, she was thinking, she always, you know, accuses us of being the most conservative parents, you know, anywhere, you know, I get that. And so she was expecting what I was going to say about this book. I said, honey, let me tell you, first of all, it's a brilliantly written book. He knows his audience. He's right. It's a wonderfully written book. Love the characters, all that. I'm glad I read it. Now let me say one thing. You know, there's this scene in it, you know, later where those two kids that aren't married, they have sex. And I don't know whether he's consciously trying to do this or not, but you need to know what that writer has done. He's sent a message that says, if you really care about somebody, you will have sex with them. And we just don't agree with that. So I just want you to be aware when there's a message coming like that in the story, you need to be aware of it, you know. And so I'm not scared of us reading anything, but we need to be engaged with our kids and help them interpret it.
Right. I agree completely.
What about the message of The League and the Lantern?
Sure. Yeah. Well, there is a couple of messages in that, I would say. And I did not set out to write a message to kids. I wanted a great story, but I think great stories have messages that are in them. Because, you know, I always say, you know, kids can smell the broccoli. Don't try to put broccoli in their ice cream. They can smell it, you know. So I'm not going to try to create an after-school special with some big moral lesson. But if you create characters that are real, they're going to end up having some moral choices, and you're going to be able to take them in directions you want to model for your kids. So the two, I think, messages that are in this for me, other than the fact of the respect for Scripture, so there's the key scene in it where Jake's able to solve this clue and save the day because he knows that Lincoln's House Divided speech is taken from a specific gospel in the Bible, and he's memorized that Scripture. So that's kind of this underlying theme of respect for Scripture. But also, there's a line about two-thirds of the way through where Jake has this habit, no matter how bad things are going, to say, I'm okay, I'm okay. And there's a one point, don't know if you've gotten to it in the book yet or not, don't want to do spoiler alert for you here.
That's fine.
Okay. Where the wheels have really fallen off of this, and it's really looking dark. And he says, I'm okay, or whatever. And Lucy says to him, says, you know, you keep saying that, but I don't know, you know, I don't know if you really kind of mean that. I almost feel like you feel like you have to pretend like everything's okay when it's not. And, you know, I don't know. And Lucy is a transplant. She's just moved back to the States from Nepal, where her parents were doctors. She said, you know, in Nepal, I don't know, it's like everybody didn't kind of, like, the kids, they didn't fake it like they do over here. Everybody over here has to pretend like everything's okay, even when it's not. And my dad always calls that looking real good and hurting real bad. And, you know, I just want to let you know that it's okay if you're not okay. You know, and that was a message I really wanted kids to hear, because I feel like middle school is that time where they feel like everybody around them's got their act together and they're the weird one.
They're,
you know,
the
and they need to know that it's okay not to feel okay. That's one. And then secondly, the message at the end when Jake has a chance, he has a chance really to exact revenge, and he shows compassion and mercy toward the bad guy. And that was, I really wanted an action adventure with fighting and all this kind of stuff. And compassion.
Yeah. When your characters are that real, you're right. They will have moral choices.
They will.
They're not always the right choice.
Right, right.
She was bragging about the second point that you were making there, about pretending everything's okay.
Yeah.
She was bragging about that to me. Well, where can our readers find your book?
Yeah, so the best place is leagueandlantern.com.
Okay.
So it's spelled just like the book, leagueandlantern.com. And we really try to push everyone there. It's also available on Amazon right now.
Okay.
And actually, I've now got all these retailers coming to me and wanting to carry it, so we'll see what happens.
Excellent.
There. But
excellent.
I feel strongly about leagueandlantern.com for a couple reasons. One, if they go to LeagueandLantern.com, they can download the first six chapters for free
okay.
and read them and just find out. Have their kid read it and yeah. see. Most kids are hooked after six chapters, but, you know, they can download the six chapters for free. But secondly, we've invisibly woven into the book 140 of the top vocabulary words that middle school kids need for success.
Excellent.
There's a free vocabulary guide available online that's written that incorporates all 140 of those words into vocabulary lessons for your kids.
Would have been very useful for homeschooling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. And we had one blogger on her website say, this is a homeschooler's Easter egg. You know, the fact that you've got this kid book my kids love, and then you have this academic resource. And that's based on research we've done with parents of middle schoolers that they mm-hmm. tell us their number one goal for their child for the summer is that they have fun.
Mm-hmm.
They just feel like childhood's being stolen from our kids. But their number two goal is that they stay sharp for school.
And they go backwards.
Yeah, the summer slide. And they tend to define that in terms of math and reading.
Yeah.
So that was the point where I worked with education professionals to weave 140 of the top vocabulary words for middle school success. So it's important to go to LeagueandLantern.com because that's where that vocabulary guide is. There's also a brief study guide on there of how Abraham Lincoln used the Bible in his speeches.
Excellent.
But the most important reason to buy the book on LeagueandLantern.com is every time somebody buys a hardcover on LeagueandLantern.com, mm-hmm. we give a hardcover away for free to a child who couldn't otherwise afford it.
Excellent.
And our partners in that right now are Salvation Army, Boys and Girls Clubs, and Big Brothers Big Sisters.
Excellent.
We just shipped 1,600 books to Salvation Army. They're giving away to kids in summer camps.
Excellent. I like that. Is there anything else you want to tell our readers?
I would say just be engaged. Stories matter.
Mm-hmm.
Stories matter. Be engaged in the kind of stories your kids are consuming.
Excellent. All right. Stopping there.